You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Monfort, Bolivar. That's right, we're up here for Semana Santa. It's only just beginning, and of course the chaos that is the Colombian Caribbean coast is fully upon us. It's the 38 degree heat and processions all around us. But anyway, it's fun, isn't it? It's fun to travel around Colombia. Colombia's greatest Achilles heel, in my opinion, is that it's too much to see. That can't justify just a week visit or 2 weeks visit. That's just too much. Anyway, this is episode 269 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I'm your host, Richard McCall, and our very special guest, who will be on the segment a little bit later after the news update from Adrian Alsema, the director of Columbia Reports. That's www.columbiareports.com, the most widely read site in English for Columbia news. Anyway, my very special guest is Alma Quiroga, and as you can hear from her name, she's of Colombian descent, but she's also half American anyway. So we hear a little bit about her life and indeed the fascinating concept that she's brought to Colombia. Now, of course, what she's offering may not be too unusual up in the United States and in various cities around the world, but in Colombia, you know, a little bit more conservative in its business styles, it is very interesting to hear how someone who is a business storytelling consultant is doing her work and, of course, convincing companies here, not just multinationals, but local companies, that this might be something they want to bring in and apply to their workplace. So very interesting to hear how a business storytelling consultant makes a success of this new facet of the workplace, for the workplace in Colombia. And of course, for those of you, like myself, who are not aware what a business storytelling consultant is, Alma will be letting us all know, of course. She'll be telling us anecdotes and, of course, a little bit about what she does when she's in a situation and has been contracted to come in and train and capacity build with a company here in Colombia. So check out her website. That's Alma Quiroga, as you'd imagine, .com. You can find more information about her and more information about what she does. But very successful and very interesting to hear about something so progressive taking place in Colombia. So I'll leave you now in the safe hands of Adrian Alsema, the director of Columbia Reports. And then we'll be back in the final segment of this show talking to Alma Quiroga about business storytelling and her consulting work. This is Columbia Calling. I am Richard McCall. This is episode 269, and thank you always for listening.
My name is Adrian Alsema, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for April 9, 2019. Two native Colombian leaders were assassinated in western Colombia in the past week. The murders took place after President Iván Duque failed to meet with indigenous leaders to discuss excessive violence and chronic state neglect. Afro-Colombian and peasant organizations have joined the native Colombian peoples and announced a national strike that will begin on April 25. Duque's approval rating has dropped from 38% to 29% between February and April, according to pollster Datexco. 64% of Colombians oppose the president. The poll indicated that Colombians are mainly unhappy with rising unemployment, higher taxes, and increased violence. Duque's lowest approval rating was registered in December, when only 22% of Colombians said they supported the president and his policies. Moderates in Congress said they will not pass any legislation until after a vote on Colombia's war crimes tribunal. According to the moderates, the Senate's far-right president is blocking a vote on the president's objections to the transitional justice system. Duque's governing coalition wants the powers of this court limited but lacks a majority in Congress. The House of Representatives already voted to dismiss Duque's objections and forced the president to sign off on the bill. The United Nations Security Council called on Colombia's government and Congress to approve the War Crimes Tribunal's powers as soon as possible. The United States Ambassador at the UN, Jonathan Cohen, said the transitional justice system was fundamental for peace. Cohen's colleague in Colombia, Kevin Whitaker, has come under fire for lobbying against the War Crimes Tribunal. U.S. President Donald Trump blasted his Colombian counterpart for the second time in a month. According to Trump, drug trafficking from Colombia has increased 50% since Duque took office in August last year. The two countries' bilateral counter-narcotics policy has been failing for years. Cocaine production in Colombia reached an all-time high in 2018, according to the country's foreign minister. Colombia's State Council nullified the election of popular opposition Senator Antanas Mockus. According to the State Council, the leader of the Green Alliance Party was impeded to run in last year's legislative elections because of pending contracts between his foundation and the government. Mockus said he will challenge the decision. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
Yes, that was the news from Adrian Alsamer over there in Medellin, the director of Colombia Reports, telling us what's going on in the country that we're all eager to learn about. As I said, this is episode 286, and my very special guest this week is Alma Quiroga, and you'll notice by that name, she's definitely got some Latina in her. She's of Colombian descent, but she's half American too. She's a business storytelling consultant, and she's moved back from the USA to Colombia, so that's always a good news story, because yes, that's someone who can see something happening and changing here in Colombia. But we wanted to talk about, and this is maybe taking a different tack this week, business storytelling, Colombia, how it all works, how it all fits together, how do you become a business storyteller, what is a business storyteller? So, well, welcome on Colombia Calling, Alma.
Thank you very much, Richard, and hello to all the listeners.
No, thank you so much for coming. Now, I'm thinking, from what I've heard about business storytelling and what we've talked about offline and the research that I've done, is, I mean, I would think that your background's from Villavicencio, growing up, and then San Francisco, and then some rural California, these, let's say, conflicts and crashes of identity and between various identities perhaps help formed who you are today in terms of what you're doing.
Absolutely. And if you would have told me that, I don't know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have believed you. Because something that I think all either dual nationalities or mixed culture, third culture kids, something that we may have in common is that we're kind of forced to think much more about identity because of the sense of we spend a good amount of our lives trying to figure out exactly what our identity is because it's not so cut and dry. And so I went through, in my own life, I went through a period of the delicate teenage years when I was in a kind of an Anglo-Saxon small rural town in California. And I found, because of the experiences that I had there, that in my 14-year-old mind, I thought being Latina is the worst. So I went through a period where I went against that because I wanted to fit in with what was immediately around me. And then I went off to university, had different perspectives, and then was embracing my Colombian identity as well. And finally, that's what helped me, you know, drive me to come here. But I also came with different expectations, thinking that when I would be here, I'd be like, yes, I'm finally with the culture that I most strongly identify with, and came here and realized that they were like, oh, you're gringa. And gringa here doesn't have a negative connotation by any means. It's actually well looked upon in general, or it's at least something interesting to full Colombians. But what this forced me to do was spend a lot of time analyzing, observing. I think you end up developing these skills without knowing it, of being very analytical, being very good at picking up on small cues, on subtle cues, and you're much more sensitive to other cultures and narratives. Because I spent so many of my years, and there were tears and existential crisis and all of that going on, I'm really summarizing it, because I spent so much of that time thinking about, am I more American or am I more Colombian? Mm. And in the end, does it really matter? Can I be a mix? Well, am I allowed to be a mix? I don't even understand it. Some days I feel 70-30, other days I feel 60-40, 50-50, whatever. So you spend all this time kind of in your head, and in the end, when you start looking up and looking around, you realize that perhaps next to someone who hasn't had those types of identity crisis, mm-hmm. you're a lot more in tune with something that I love, we'll be talking about, which are the narratives, cultural narratives, identity, and how all of that starts to play together, and you start to find your place in the world. And then you start to realize, you know, I can choose. Mm-hmm. It's not just blood. I can choose my stories.
Just coming out of left field then, having, you know, I have a 4-year-old mm-hmm. Anglo-Colombian child, son, what advice can you give me, perhaps, because he will get at some point to those fragile existential teenage years. I mean, I don't know if we're going to be here or there, most likely here, but I fear for those teenage years.
Yes.
Rebellion, I think.
Yes.
He's such a happy little boy right now. I don't want him to be replaced with some angst-ridden, you know, I don't know what to say, oik. But anyway, no, don't take it up. But so, you know, you come from a background, I would say, that's rich in storytelling in terms of Villavicencio and the Llanos. And I believe that your father, who's the most llanero of all llaneros, his nickname is El Poeta.
Well, yes. There was a time in his life, he's actually a very bohemian llanero. So of all things,
put together.
He taught himself French and Italian only because he wanted to be able to read some of the literary classics in the original language.
It's amazing.
Like Guy de Maupassant, he was like, I don't want to read this in Spanish, I want to read it in French. And so he was out in Arauca at that time and started teaching himself. Then he came to college, like most Colombians from the province, let's call it that.
Yes.
He came to Bogota. And in Bogota, he was a starving university kid, a starving uni kid like most of us were at one point. And he was living near the Candelaria, and little by little, he became known for his excellent, what we would call in Spanish, parla. Can you remind me what that is?
Parla.
Parla,
like
buena
discourse.
Parla, yes. Yeah. He's excellent. It's not necessarily like being a... someone who's good at fooling, but someone who is just really good with words.
Yeah.
He loved poetry, he loved literature, and so there were certain mafiosos at that time in the Candelaria, but you know, mafiosos want to fall in love too. And so...
Where's this going?
Yes. So he was hired a few times by a few, you know, small-time mafiosos to write love poems and love letters with his excellent use of narrative and lyrical and prose writing. And so he would write in the name of some of these guys, and in return, sometimes they would give him or food or just protection or a combination of both. And so, yeah, and then you know, he met my mother in the 70s, and then they fell in love and decided to make it official. And while we were growing up, he always instilled the love of story and narrative within us.
Well,
and música llanera is very rich in storytelling.
Well, it's the troubadour type thing, isn't it? Telling the stories of each town as they go around.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, your dad was here in Bogota as like a Cyrano de Bergerac. You
exactly.
Know, quoting, you know, that you've got the mafioso beneath the balcony, repeating the lines that are being whispered to him from behind the cornice. So fascinating. Really interesting.
Yes.
So this has obviously influenced you.
Of course.
So we have, you know, we've got the background here.
Yes.
We've got the background to why. But tell us then, I mean, because there's going to be people out there like myself, because I did not know until we met, what is a business storytelling? What is business storytelling consulting?
What is business storytelling? Great question. So storytelling in general, when it's applied to the business world, I think the first thing that needs to be clarified is that it's a very ample, a wide reach. Mm-hmm. It's a broad term, right? And so in the most concise ways, and then I'll give you some examples, yeah. is that storytelling is applying the elements of narrative mm-hmm. to different business processes, things that go on among human beings in the business context, mm-hmm. right? Because in the end, business is made of people, not robots, right? And so it's based on this deep understanding. I'm not the scientist who's saying this, but there's a lot of research out there and a lot of people who are talking about this, that human beings, we are storytelling animals, right? Yes. Something that makes us different is that we do interpret and understand our world through narrative. And this is something that is just constantly going on, and it manifests itself in, you know, like office gossip. Mm-hmm. And what we do, I mean, think about every when you're away from your wife and you come home in the evening, what do? You sit down and tell her some stories yeah. about how your day went, and then she tells you some stories.
That's true.
And so on and so forth. And so if you really want business to be positive, and this goes to a core belief of mine that business should be a force for good, that when business began, let's say, it was very simple. It was micro businesses. Yeah. It was bartering. It was helping families, communities survive, exist. And then, you know, little by little, we've gone through all of, we know history. We've gone through different types of revolutions and then different types of economies. But in the end, despite its evolution, business is still made up, run by human beings. And human beings connect through story, and human beings make meaning of their existence through story. So business storytelling is about understanding that and helping business leaders use story elements to drive positive initiatives. Mm-hmm. So whether that is leadership development, for example, I love to, my two areas of my, the way that I focus business storytelling is leadership development. So it's helping leaders become not only better communicators, mm-hmm. but also more empathetic leaders, people who are more in tune, more in tune with what is going on with all these kind of collective stories, collective narratives, what's going on in their workplace, in their team. Why is there low productivity? Is it just systems and interfaces, or is it actually that there's a bunch of negative stories that are being told among team members that are affecting the way that a worker, employee feels within his or her workplace. Yeah. That's one example. The other way that I love to apply business storytelling beyond, you know, good speaking and telling stories itself. Telling stories is level one. Mm-hmm. Would be level three. So I'll go back over that. So level three for me, deeper, going down deeper, is organizational culture. Uh-huh. And so if we really are storytelling animals, and I believe we are, if we are, then the root of our beliefs, at the root of our beliefs, our values, our real values, not the ones that are up on beautiful poster boards in corporate offices. No. Our real values, our real beliefs are rooted in those collective narratives.
Okay.
So that would be level. So helping leaders understand, wow, no one is connecting with our mission and vision statement. You know why? Because in their day-to-day life at the office, they're not finding coherency. There's a bunch of other stories going on about what it's really like to work at ABC company, right? Mm-hmm. And so I like going to that deep, deep level. So mm-hmm. level one would be the communication, mm-hmm. what we usually think of when we think about storytelling. Mm-hmm. Level two would be leadership, like soft skill leadership abilities, empathy, listening, connecting, being able to take on the role of a mentor type mm-hmm. of leader. And three would be bigger picture, the organizational culture and how to get everyone into the same story. This company is telling a story for the world, and this is your role in it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a sense, there's a sense of belonging.
Yes.
So people are not just
through story. Yes.
Cog in that production.
Oh God. Yes. Getting away from that.
So now I see this. Uh-huh. And you're going to give me examples
yes.
of companies
yes.
that employ this kind of, let's say, mm-hmm. human technology.
Yeah, nice.
But I see this as being something very progressive, being something that would work incredibly well in California, Oregon, Washington State, other states on the other on the eastern seaboard, and so on. How does this work in Colombia? Because this is, you know, this is a conservative country in its business practice, and let's say you're in appearance as well, and and your role. It's very much I would say it's a difficult place to break through, but I think you've had some success here.
No, I would say the opposite. Sorry, I would say difficult to break through in these topics. No, we have a lot of, you know, multinationals here. And so, of course, these multinationals means that their headquarters are in another country. Now, I think it's actually a great time of opportunity in Colombia, because if you look at what's going on, and of course Colombia Calling talks about this a lot from different angles and perspectives, Colombia is going through a type of rebirth, which is an archetypical, that's a narrative arc that is a type of story we all know, we've all heard, and it's extremely valuable for human beings, right? So this takes time, especially for a whole country. It's rebirth in the way that the Colombians see, that we see ourselves. It's rebirth in the way that we do things and understand ourselves within the world marketplace, all of that. So in the midst of this rebirth and a lot of things that are going on economically, yes, of course, there are crises, but crises are also excellent opportunities for new birth. There is this, at least in my practice, in the contact that I've had with lots of managers and country presidents here in multinationals and in some national companies, really, leaders, business leaders who are really questioning, you know, the way that we have traditionally seen leadership, don't think it's so effective. There's a huge influence from the US and Europe in general. And kind of going back to when I came here and someone would hear, I have a slight accent when I speak Spanish, right? Because I didn't grow up completely in Colombia, so it makes sense. But when people would hear it and they would call me, ay, gringa, da-da-da-da, at first I thought it was taking offense. And then if you listen, people are actually really interested because there is a huge influence. Now, that's a whole other topic, whether that's good or bad. But it's good in this sense because business leaders are paying attention to leadership gurus and different theories that are coming more out of the US. So people like Brené Brown and Simon Sinek and Seth Godin, and they're listening, we're connecting. Colombians are really at the, I'm gonna use a cliche phrase, but the cutting edge, not only in technology stuff, but also in wanting to know, hey, how is business? What are we supposed to do? And so I actually come across a lot of Colombian business leaders who are thirsty and hungry for different ways to practice leadership, different ways to be productive. Getting away from, there's a very strong cultural narrative here that is that has to do with kind of hierarchies, and it's an inheritance from the Spanish conquistadores, and it's strong, and you see it everywhere, and that has a lot of negative things. It has some positive things, but that story is huge. That story has permeated Colombian identity, and since we're in a time of rebirth, even that story has been for not just this year, like for the last 10, 15 years, and so many young people going out and being exposed, and Colombia is also really big in what is orange economy and everything related to, you know, tech startups. Actually, Colombian and young Colombians my age, we are out there on the forefront and trying to be very competitive in business. And in order to be competitive in business and with the different types of economy, you know, the gig economy and the collaborative economy and all of those things, they're also being lived, especially here in Bogota, you feel it very much. And so these leaders actually come to me and ask, not just to me, to other consultants, sorry, but the ones that I interact with, they're actually really interested in saying, you know, I've heard about this storytelling, how is it done, da da da. So many of them come, usually, my main point of reference is, a business leader maybe looking me up on LinkedIn or having heard about me and saying, you know, I feel that we're not really good at being empathetic, or, you know, kind of our leaders are not so good at listening, or I feel like our people are just not really connected and we have a lot of turnover with millennials and why don't they want to stay? Well, that's a whole other story. But if I could give an example.
Go for it.
So even a national company, there's this national company that I adore, even though they are not perfect. So I'm going to give you my vision as an external consultant. But I had the privilege of working with a national company that started off as this little mom and pop in the industrial area. They do textiles in the textile industry, and they've grown over the last 40 years. They've acquired, they export a lot, blah, blah, blah. And they were also in this wonderful moment of rebirth. Like, who are we? Actually, now that I think about it, I tend to gravitate or work a lot with companies that are questioning their identity and how they fit into this world and how they are a part of making Colombia better. Mm-hmm. That's actually a really important question. How am I contributing as a company to the peace process, to economic progress, all of that? So trust me, there are leaders like that out there. Yeah. And so they reached out to me. At this time I was with a smaller group as well, and they said, I feel like our people aren't connected. We're kind of like, this was the name of our brand before, but I think those who are working in the factory, they don't understand, and the administrative, they don't understand. So people are just kind of like with cogs, with their heads down, working. Colombians are very hard workers. Yes. No one can ever doubt that. Hard workers, right? And they're working, but there's not an emotional connection. And so when a company president tells you that, you know that there's a lot of playing room. There's a wide open field that you can do things with. And so little by little, we started working on, okay, what is their actual company's narrative? And this narrative, this story, their origin story, this is who we are. This is what we value. This is what we're like. And I actually use, you know, narrative elements like archetypes, and we compare to either literary or figures from movies and say, okay, this is what we're like. Oh, this is our identity. And this is the value that we add to the world and to our specific clients, and my role as a leader, now talking about each leader, my role as a leader is to empower and build these other people up, because this is the value we are bringing. And when you put that into a story form, all of a sudden it's really easy to connect to, and it's inspiring because now it's a bigger story. And in the end, you're answering through story that important question of why do we even exist as a company, right? Super important question. And so we did that, and then we started working with the leaders. And by leaders, I mean like a group of 25.
Yeah.
Was the first group. And they went through a four-month process with me where we taught them about something called narrative intelligence, where we 2-hour sessions a week, where we brought them through, okay, understanding our own stories, kind of like what you were doing at the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah.
How have my own stories affected the way that I view leadership? Then we went through, okay, how do I listen to other people's stories? Okay, how do I understand that story is affecting everything that's going on in the teams? And oh, that's why when we have multidisciplinary teams, you know, the finance guy is caught up in this narrative and the operations guy is focused on how do we unite these stories, so they realize, wait, we're all, you know, this is more like Narnia, where it's four brothers and sisters, right?
Yeah.
Who are working towards a common goal and have different actors, providers, for example, who come alongside them to reach this goal. There he is. And so we worked with them, and then they used storytelling techniques. They used storytelling techniques to design initiatives. And then they started working on different initiatives within the company. So we're talking about a year and a half process where they ended up doing really cool things, where lots of people started hearing different stories about service, good service, internal service, stories about clients who were happy, stories about clients who understood what this company was doing for the world, all of that. So in the end, there's still work to be done, but there was a lot of change. There was a lot of change. These leaders were more in tune. They were more empathetic. People were like, oh, this is what our company is about. So even the person who was in the factory and the person who was doing finance models, they both felt like I have a place in this bigger story. Yeah.
Wow, it's so very positive that a company that expanded from mom and pop company in textiles to be progressive enough to do that.
Yes.
You don't imagine it at all.
Yeah.
How have you personally dealt then? I mean, we talked a little bit about the sort of background of Colombia, conservatism. You mentioned the Spanish inheritance, heritage, and so on. Mm-hmm. How do you deal? You walk in and with the machismo. Because it's serious here. I mean, when you come in and say, well, listen, we're going to talk, we're going to listen. I mean, do you get looks from people and then, what's this woman going to say to us now? What's this hippie stuff?
Yes. Exactly.
It must be.
Yes, yes.
You've got to have a certain degree of an escudo, a shield.
Yes, definitely. I think one thing that is important is that, in fact, someone I admire, Seth Godin, talks about how in order to have a tribe, you really don't need 100%, right? You need a high percentage. So I go in, first of all, when I actually get to work with a group, because I'm usually, in workshops and all of that. When I actually get to go with a group, I'm going to find some naysayers. I'm going to find some people, of course, who... And there's some basic things like, okay, she's a young girl. What? What is she going to teach me? I am 45. I'm 55. I've been a manager for blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
All of those things that are, in the end, normal. But I know that there's going to be some naysayers and that I just may not be at the point in their life where they're ready to change the narrative, right? That actually takes effort.
Yes.
It does take effort. So there's that, but what I try to do, I'm going to give you a metaphor. What I try to do is think about it as, since storytelling is this big, deep world, it's something that we all do and we all know instinctively, but since the stories in our mind are usually there on an unconscious level, bringing people to realize how real this is, how we are swimming in this water of narrative. What I try to do is take them kind of like a day at the beach. Every session with me is kind of a day at the beach.
All right.
And if it's the first time you've been at the beach and that ocean looks pretty big and there's some big waves and you can't see because we're not talking about San Andres, but it's maybe murkier waters, not clear. The worst thing I could do would be to just take them to the shore and then push them in.
Yes.
No, what I like to do is take them by the hands if they allow me, right? And take them in little by little. So we start walking in so they can start feeling the water. So what I mean by this in more concrete terms are simple little exercises to get people to see, story really does affect the way that I feel and think and interact with people on a daily basis. Once people can see that for themselves through these little exercises, and once they can start to identify, and it's not only in movies, it's in what happened with me in that feedback meeting that I had this morning. There were stories going on there, and those stories were clashing, or those stories were coming together. Then, little by little, then they're ready to be like, oh, I could deep dive. And in the end, that's what you want, because at least what I really believe and my work is rooted in this is that the business world, a long time ago, divorced itself from humanities. Because storytelling work actually involves anthropology, sociology, psychology, and, of course, literary elements, right? So those are all humanities. And the way I see it is that the business world divorced itself a long time ago from the humanities and said, I don't need anything from you. I'm doing quite fine with my bottom lines and my shareholders and my my KPIs and all of these beautiful things that I have developed for myself. So you can leave, humanities, and I think that I'm not the only one, right, in the business world who thinks that humanities and the business world need to get back together because they are a perfect wedding.
That's
perfect matrimony.
Truly fascinating. I'm getting that you're talking here and I'm thinking of the literary world and maybe when this divorce took place between humanities and business, and I'm thinking of the 1980s and the consumerism.
Oh God.
So I'm already thinking of the books like American Psycho and Bright Lights, Big City or whatever, Jane McKinney, just where it was all about the bottom line. The eye, nothing else, nothing in the night. So very interesting. I like it very much.
Simon Sinek talks about that a lot. You can look up some of his talks, but yes. And I would say it was even before then, before the Industrial Revolution, right? Like humanities, this is about getting things done.
Have you ever gone into a company then that's you've just recognized and felt the energy as just being totally toxic? Walking in.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, have you been, or there's one, let's say, bad, rotten apple in there who really is affecting the rest?
What I find is that, yes, there are, unfortunately, lots of toxic workplaces. Uh-huh. Way more than there are positive ones. On one hand, because it's much more work to be coherent.
Yes.
So, there's that. There's a lot more, like I said, since most companies still unconsciously believe that the business world has no real use for humanities. Well, of course their workplaces are going to be toxic. What I often find as I start to get into the culture, I'm not an anthropologist, but I've studied enough to know that, you know, you kind of need to go in and observe and see, find the watering hole, see what stories are being told there, where what's really going on in that culture. What I often find, and this breaks my heart, is that that whole toxic workplace usually is rooted in just a handful of selfish or not self-aware egocentric or lazy leaders. And that's why I think leadership is so key. Now, it does not mean that 100% of toxic workplaces are because of leaders. No, because there are other stories where you find some really empathetic and inspiring and great leaders who just unfortunately aren't able to penetrate the stronger stories that are going on and things that maybe have been going on for a while in that company. But it's usually the case that it's just a few. And it's incredible how I've seen when there was a bad leader, or I'm going to call them bad, but those black and white terms are not the best, right? But maybe a leader who is not self-aware, a leader who is not taking time to work on him or herself, or a leader who has bought into the dogma of results, 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 right?
Yes.
So then that leader leaves and another one comes in, and all of a sudden you see whoever that team, that team was, maybe those 15, 10, 20 people who were in constant contact with their direct boss, right? All of a sudden things start changing and people are a little more optimistic and they really think, and maybe, you know, my job isn't so bad. So that's actually one of the things that really drives me, because I have friends who are in multinationals here in Bogota who tell me these terrible stories where they're like, I was so happy at work. I was having, you know, I was really doing things. I was connecting with my clients, blah, blah, blah. And then they gave me this new leader, and he or she, I have a friend right now who he is going crazy because he was doing really well. And this new boss comes in, and she is just from a totally different story about what it means to be a leader. And so she is in that story where it's like, you just get out the whip and feelings are dumb. And all we really care about is your performance, right? The performance that performance narrative, which can do so much damage. And so this company's going to lose him. And he's had fantastic results. But his whole world changed because of these bad leaders. So I think that's really where the work has to begin. You know, that is the birthing place of healthier workplaces where people can actually feel like, hey, here at work, okay, it's just work. I'm not going to be super romantic about it. Yeah, it's work. But also I feel that I'm contributing something, and that there's an opportunity for self-realization, and I'm being empowered, and there are some people around me who are not perfect, and maybe we're not the best of friends, but I'm a part of a business that is doing something cool, even if we sell bolts.
Yeah.
You know? This is an important part of my own journey, to talk in terms of the hero's journey, right? And if you get your employees to think like that, and if you get leaders to think like, hey, one of my primary jobs here is not just results, but the way to get to positive results and productivity is by empowering people, just like any good mentor, any Yoda or Obi-Wan Kenobi or Gandalf or Arwen, right?
Yeah.
Then things start to change drastically.
I could think, I'm not going to mention any, but I could think and name easily, you know, half a dozen companies here that would really, really benefit from this.
Yes.
As you coming in as a Gandalf or Yoda.
Yeah.
And just sort of unraveling what would be probably just years of malcontent. And there is, I do get the feeling for a lot of people here in Colombia, certainly. I think it's a culture.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just work.
Exactly.
We get on the Transmillennium.
But you know what's behind that? You know what's behind that? That it's just work?
Mm.
Well, yes. I admit that not everyone is as romantic as I can be. Great. And I don't expect the world to be. But in the end, this narrative of it's just work, if you really unpack it, it's a defense mechanism. Because to believe that those 8 hours I spend at the office could actually have some meaning, even if it doesn't become the central part of my life, because that's not the idea, but that they do have meaning and that it's contributing to who I am becoming and my own journey as an individual. And it's not just putting food on the table, but it's contributing something that there's, right? And some people talk about it like as an emotional salary or whatever, but more than just kind of those monetary economic terms. No. What if we thought about it? What if you gave yourself, you opened up that space to be a little more optimistic, and you could see work as not the end all be all, but an important part of my story. And to not open yourself up to that is because you've heard lots of negative stories. And let's be real, here in Colombia, the majority of people are dealing with terrible bosses. Not just not self-aware, but some of them are actually terrible and don't care, right? Or some that are trying to do it well, but they're just, they need more tools. So most of us want to shut ourselves off and say, you know what, work is just work. I'm not going to put my heart in there. I'm not going to put my emotions in there. What's the point? What's really important to me is my wife or my husband or my kids or whatever. And that's great. I'm not saying that people need to rearrange their priorities, but I think there's a defense mechanism there. I think that it's hard to think about things changing. But what if in Colombia our business leaders started changing? How would that affect productivity? How would that affect the bottom line? And that's the big challenge there, because since there is such a strong narrative that that empathy and connection and being emotionally connected with your work, there's the story that that has nothing to do with bottom line. Why? Because it's very hard to measure. Yes, because it's touchy-feely things, right? God forbid. And it's not just about, I'm not talking about focusing on touchy-feely things. I'm talking about the wedding between the two, which means that business and humanities have an equally important part. So it's not just focusing on emotions and everyone sitting around at the office and singing Kumbaya. I'm also not preaching that gospel, right? But it's having, yes, KPIs and measurement and the difficult feedback and blah, 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 but also keeping in mind empathy and connection and not losing sight of the big picture of why your company is here. Imagine how Colombia could change. Imagine how the private sector would contribute to the progress of this country. I really believe That's real. It takes time and it takes courage. And a lot of leaders may not want to put in all that effort. But I'm going for the ones that do.
Well, fantastic. Very upbeat. And also quite inspirational. And I know that a lot of my listeners out there will be, well, you know, we need to get in touch with Alma. We need to listen. If not in Colombia, but perhaps in the US.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? So, you know, let me take this moment to say thank you so much for your time and for sharing, you know, these insights, because I have a small business and mm-hmm. I will take a lot of this on board. I like to think that the people who work in the hotel are happy. I like to think so.
Yes.
Pardon me. But so check out, thank you, Monty. Check out Alma's website. That's www.almaquiroga.com. Of course, I'll put that on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere else so that you can make a reference to it. She's on LinkedIn. She's got a professional profile and on Facebook and so on. So she's out there. I mean, there's no way you can't find her, especially if you're looking for improvements in your workplace and just giving the people who work there just a little bit more of a sense of belonging in the workplace, which I think would be incredibly positive here in Colombia. So
yeah.
This has been episode 286 with Alma Quiroga, the business storytelling consultant. Thank you again for being on Colombia
Calling. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's been a real pleasure. We'll be back next week with a further interview with someone doing something interesting in Colombia or about Colombia or something along those lines. I've been Richard McCall. This has been Colombia Calling. Thank you for listening.